That was better than AVN by a mile.
Wasn't that? That was amazing.
You
Hey,
gotta
everyone.
leave that in some.
Oh, don't worry. We make sure everything that needs to be edited out is.
Not.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the big show. I'm your host, Jeff Gamet, and oh my God, amazing people here today.
I thought you were interim host.
No, we
I
changed
showed you
that.
how long it's been since you've listened.
Yeah, we changed that like months ago.
I was strong-armed into changing to saying I'm the host instead of the interim
Oh,
host.
right. Sorry, man.
Jeff, I thought you said you had a conversation with Ewan about all this.
He
Oh,
did.
Ewan, here's the conversation. It's happening now.
He did. Just
Last
a different Ewan.
pig? No, it's bull.
That was kind of weird doing that while you're actually here.
Yeah, no, I'm still a flake, mate. Carry on. I'm useless. Keep going.
Well, then you fit right in, just as you always have. Just like the rest of us. Anyhow, yeah, we're doing the show thing. Ewan, how's it going?
I'm all right. I'm okay. I've got a bit more time now. Thursday nights can be a bit of a push because it's the only night that Ellis can have a beer, but he's gone back full time on shift, so Thursday nights he's closing the bar now, so I can't go out for a beer with him anymore on a Thursday. So I should be here a little bit more. Fridays sometimes yes, sometimes no, but yeah, now I should be around an awful lot more, unfortunately for you lot.
Well, thank you for the warning, but really, that sounds awesome
Well, I got told off for
because
leaving the whiskey collection off. Someone sent an email saying leave the whiskey collection because I put a fake background up the other week, and they said no, leave the whiskey collection.
well,
So there you go.
I'm glad that that you're showing the whiskey collection. I
There is a
noticed it was there.
Basil Hayden there, right? But the rest are all Scottish, so.
So I'm looking and I'm thinking. There's a couple other
So that's
American
that that's
whiskeys
a
that should be up there.
No, that's a Bushmills. That's a Tamnavoulin. That's a Glenallachie. That one is a Glendronach. That's Glenallachie. These two, oh, my fingers are reversed. Hang on. Those two there are Aberlour. That one's a Glenfarclas, which is the one off The Gentleman, the film The Gentleman, yeah? That one.
The
And
gentleman.
then a Teelings. That's a gin, actually. I've been doing some micro-aging in a barrel, which I have to phone
Oh,
about.
nice.
And Clarice had a go at aging a gin. That is an oak-aged gin. I need to send you some to try, Jeffrey, because
That
you'll
sounds
appreciate it.
absolutely wonderful.
It is actually really nice. And then there's a Bal Blair down the bottom here and a couple of others. But yeah, there's an Ode to the Dart there. There's one below that box, which is called Ode to the Dark. No, not Ode to the Dark. It's Oh, Heart of Darkness, and it's been made to go with a Guinness. So you drink a Guinness
Nice.
and you have the Heart of Darkness with it as a chaser. It's stunning. It's really nice. It comes in like a square bottle. It's beautiful. Let's do a show on whiskies.
We are right now, and I'm thinking for people that like whiskeys but may not want to do a beer thing for whatever reason, I bet you could substitute a dark chocolate like 80%,
Well,
90%,
you
and
remember?
you do that.
It's not. It's not a dark. No, it's not. It's not very chocolatey, I have to say. It's really good. But if you remember, in 2014, when I came to Macworld, you and just had his name on my lips, and I've forgotten it. Ken.
Ken Ray.
Ken.
Yeah, you and Ken Ray started to educate me a bit more on American whiskeys. So I did say bourbons are all shit, which they're not. The Basil Hayden, I will gladly drink that by itself. Eagle Rare, I'll drink that by itself as well, quite happily. Maker's Mark 46, I'll drink that by itself. The rest have all got to have Coke in them, though, so far.
Well, then the next time it's safe for you to come to the United States, I
They
am
said
going
something on
to.
my Twitter post, that's never going to happen.
That might be a while.
Okay, fair. Okay, so we can now have this dream that someday, we can do a proper bourbon experience for you here.
No, Jeff, it's the opposite. When they leave you out of the country and into the UK, then you can come over and bring some bourbon with you.
Yeah, no, but I really want to do Maxstock at some point.
Speaking of, I found out when Mike Potter had me on for Mac Guys Only last weekend, found out live on the show that my presentation proposal has been accepted. So I will be speaking of stock again this year.
I'd had that too when Mr. Kent said, yeah, that'd be great, do that one. I'm like, oh Christ, my ass clenched. I have to actually do it now, aren't I?
So anyhow, it would be so great to get to hang out.
I want to come over. I'm seeing Doc in April. Doc's coming to Birmingham.
Wow. Oh, the ECAM
he's coming to Birmingham. Awesome. So Patrice, you got to get over. It's only a short haul for you. And anyone that's in Birmingham wants to meet Doc Rock, and then join us. He's staying at the East Side Rooms, which is just in Aston Business Park. It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. Dead easy for me. I will be there. There will be whiskey drunk, I'm sure.
With Doc, 100%. Yes.
Yep. So, cool. All right. Well, then, everyone, thanks for joining us for the British Whiskey Show.
The Whiskey Show.
And, you can introduce the other two. It's fine, Jeff. Don't worry. It's not all about me.
Oh, no. I thought we were doing a show and we had a live audience of Patrice and Tom.
Yes.
Patrice, how are you?
I'm doing good. I'm, the world. I'm okay. It's all okay. Not much to report. I'm going flying on Sunday, so I'm looking forward to that.
Awesome.
Wait away Friday and Saturday.
Friday I work, and Saturday nobody's available to fly with me, so otherwise I would have done it.
You and we'll drive over. You can go together. That's what you mean.
He's
right?
Not allowed. That's
me and Patrice have already got a deal that if she gets me into Austrian Railways with Sentry, then I'm flying lessons.
Oh yes.
Oh yes.
I think that sounds great.
Mm-hmm.
And if Tom gets me into Amtrak, then I'll pay for his chartered flight over to here for drink beer with Doc.
We have a high speed rail project in California. Maybe you can.
I'm totally up for that, mate. I'm totally up for it.
Of course, it's the U.S. It'll take 15 years to get it going.
Don't start, mate. You are trying to game the wrong nation here, mate. High speed is definitely not the construction time.
Yeah. I don't know if everyone realizes that the Vogons in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy are based on British bureaucrats.
Yeah, of course. Douglas Adams.
How
is that a surprise?
In the United States, there's a lot of people that just really don't understand how the rest of the world works.
Mm-hmm. You have not seen German bureaucracy. And if you think it's efficient, no, they're just efficient at not working.
Do your trains still arrive on time?
No. They had, 50% on time rate last year? 50%.
50%.
Yes.
I did work for the MOD in Germany at the turn of the century.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way that I know what the word for platform is because I missed the train. But because it was on time and it was like everything was on friggin' time.
Yeah. Not anymore. I mean, right now it's more like you're lucky if the train comes at all. So it's like in the US.
Yeah, which is a problem when you're trying to catch a train to the Munich airport and you have no idea when it's going to
when or if, or if it's even going to go there, or just take the wrong track and go somewhere else. Like, who knows?
Right.
1935, and a bloke with a rifle shoots a big fat bloke in the hip.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on.
So, opposite of all of that, the epitome of efficiency. Tom, how are you?
Efficiency? No, I'm retired. I'm not very efficient anymore. I'm great. Tonight is a big event. It's Spamalot night at the Golden Gate Theater in San Francisco.
Spamalot. I loved getting to see that live.
Very good.
Yeah.
That's cool.
We saw it in Vegas like 7 or 8 years ago, but it came to the city, so we're going to see Spamalot. I'm looking forward to that.
Awesome.
And last Saturday, we went to see Don McMillan, the comedian.
Mm-hmm.
Technically funny. Have you guys ever run across him?
Is he the guy that does like graphs and charts as part of the PowerPoint? Mm-hmm.
He's wicked.
Yes, he's funny. Yeah.
He's great. So
he and I worked together in the 80s. He was a chip designer like me in the 80s.
Mm-hmm. Mate, just drop the mic and go. Don't need to do the rest of the show. Jeez,
I should invite him to show up on this sometime. And
that would be fun.
Yeah, oh, mate, I'm totally paying for the charter for you two to come over and see Doug.
Let me make a note. I'm sure he'd do it. He'd come on for 10 or 15 minutes and give me some.
Oh, we love his stuff, mate. You won't get any dissenters here. He'll get love galore.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
And now we're going to start referring to you as Tom F., Gateway to the Stars.
I mean, technically, he's the closest anyway, right?
he doesn't live up here anymore. He lives in Southern California. But
That's still relatively close to you.
You know we do this on Zoom, right?
Yeah. I'm old school. Come on. Anyway, looking forward to Spamalot, and if Don ever comes to your region, go see him.
Mate, he is wicked. I absolutely adore him.
One of his jobs at the company we worked at was he would we had chip design software in addition to making chips. He would train the customers on how to use the software. So can you imagine Don standing up in front of you for 8 hours? It was the best training ever. Technical training ever.
See, that's the thing. I can totally see it because that is the material that he needed for his comedy bits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mate, if you get him on, I will just sit quietly and let him do his thing. Mm-hmm. Jeez, what a man. He's superb. I love his stuff. On TikTok.
Yeah. Oh, great.
Mm-hmm.
I'll let him know. Yeah, I think he'd have fun here. He likes to be around other nerds, so.
Not a surprise.
Other dissenting morons.
Yeah. Bless our hearts. Yeah. Hey, Ewan, it's been a while. So just so you know, the way the show works, we basically do exactly what we're doing here, which is hang out and just chit chat. But then occasionally we talk about the week's tech news. So
it's not a bring a story party anymore.
No, it is.
Oh, it's totally bring a story party.
Okay, I know. So yeah. I brought a story. There you go.
Yeah.
And look at that. And you're the first person with a story. And you even used the live chat correctly. Ewan, I'm so proud of you.
Mate, you think I don't listen. I do.
You say that, and yet you're totally shocked to find out that I've been...
Well, I missed the interim hosting.
Myself as the host.
No, I missed that. That has slipped by me. I do agree.
Yeah. So, all right, Ewan, tell us about your story.
So there's a story today that Canon have put in a patent for... a 1.4 lens. Now you're going to go, well, okay, but there's lots of other 1.4s out there, but a lot of the 1.4s are actually fixed. If you want to get something that's a zoom change, then you're going to probably be talking about 2.8. Mm-hmm. But they're talking about a 1.4 lens that's going to go across a 24 to 45 lens, and they're talking maybe even up to a 28 to 70 millimeter lens in 1.4. So, I mean, how big it's going to be? There's the first question.
Big.
The 85
400 pounds.
Well, yeah, the 84 millimeter, the 85 millimeter lens is not cheap, and it's pretty chunky in comparison. I mean, it's bigger. The diameter feels like it's bigger in terms of top to bottom of the RF lens than it already is. It's only RF. It's not. It's not in any of the fitting. Yeah, so it's not going to do EF. But the interesting thing is, I mean, I've got 2 points to make. Number one, if this is a patent which is going to create something that's going to reduce the price of 2.8s, that'd be cool.
Yeah, that would be very cool.
If you're going, okay, so your 2.8 is going to cost you 1.5K, but now we've reduced and we've produced this 1.4, we're going to put that in at 1.5K, and now your 2.8 is going to be about 800 quid or less than 1,000. Yes, please. Thank you very much. Because who needs 1.4? No one. And if you want to get some of the stuff that is 1.4 and you want to go down to the lower end of stuff, particularly in the RF lenses, I mean, you can get a 16mm 2.8 and it's under 500 quid easily.
RF and the thing is reasonably priced.
Yeah, exactly. They're fixed, and they're truly a spherical as well. So you're not talking about worrying about the barreling. So you haven't got the curvature on the uprights. You've just got the diagonals on the uprights, and you can straighten those.
Yeah, that's
so easy. Yeah, so I just it was an interesting discussion point about, well, okay, how much have they invested in this? They've clearly got something that's worth keeping, because otherwise, why would you issue a patent for it? And if you're going to issue a patent for it, then you're clearly doing it so that you can maintain a financial control over it.
Yeah.
And anyone who knows what they're doing, who'd want to buy it? Because actually, I mean, you know, those like, you remember the wanker wear that you used to get with like the fast change lens belts and stuff like that? I mean,
the wanker, yeah.
I mean, the lens bandoliers.
Mate, I mean, I've got EF and I've got RF. And the lenses I've got a fixed a spherical 16mm, a 24mm, and a 40mm that go on it. And I don't want anything else. I've got a 28-70 in EF. I've got a 16-35 in AF, in EF. And I've got 7200 in AF. And I just don't need to worry about. So I'm just questioning, it's a bit like the Apple Studio display thing. Mm-hmm. Why on earth have they done it? They're trying to key corner the market. Maybe they're trying to make a financial killing on what they've developed, because they've clearly developed something that's pretty frigging cool. However,
somebody will
just
buy
make
it.
2.8 millimeters cheaper.
Somebody will spend $8,000 for it.
Yeah, of course.
You know, just to get it.
Well, see, just now that's the thing. Is what's the price point going to be? I don't know. Because the thing is, it's like, who's paying? You're paying 1.5 for a 2.8 at the moment, at that kind of level. You're paying 2K, 2.5K maybe in dollars, perhaps, because you're a bit expensive over there at the moment. Are they really going to be paying 5K for a lens just to get 1.4, which, you know, 1.4, you're talking about the difference between my eye and my ear, or even the tip of my glasses here being completely out at close range.
Right.
So it's like, what are you getting from the 1.4 that you're not getting from a 2.8 that warrants this amount of expenditure, other than the fact you're going 1.4 super cool? Yes, it is, but the photographer's going, oh, wow, it's super cool, but I ain't going to buy it.
Mm. Well, plus, as you say, the size of it and the weight. I mean, I assume it's going to be pretty heavy.
You've got to have a big front glass for that to get it down to the fitting for an RF.
Right. I haven't made the switch to mirrorless yet. Do you like the RF or the mirrorless choices from Canon?
Yeah, I've got the R6. I bought it for video more than anything, but now I've got the converter for EF, so all my EF lenses fitting on it. The one thing I've got is I've got a 600mm f/4. That I had from when I was photographing on the European tour, and I can't have that be obsolete. So the converter's fine. It adds a little bit of distance. So I don't know what the actual figures are. I might be shooting at more like 620mm, 650mm, but I'm still getting f/4 out of it. It's not taking anything down on the f-stop, and it still keeps it crystal clear. It's beautiful.
And that's with the Canon converter, not a third party.
No, it's the Canon. Yeah, I'm not doing a third party stuff. That I mean, for the sake of 120 quid, and that's all it was. You know, it's like you've got to do the Canon, and like I say, the RF to EF converter is blindingly fast in terms of focus as well. It's there's no lag.
That's what everybody says. Are you okay with the electronic viewfinder, or does that take some getting used to?
No, I'm fine with it. It's I mean, the thing is as well for me, because of the glasses, I take the glasses off when I use it, and I just so if I'm shooting video, I'll normally go off the back LED. But if I'm doing stills, particularly with it like down at the rugby club and things like that, I'll always go through the viewfinder, and it's got the diopter change so that you can change it for your prescription. And I'm still not blind enough to worry about that yet.
Still not blind enough.
Yet.
Well, I went for an eye test this year, and the woman said, so just cover your right eye.
Mm-hmm.
And read the tea. I said, there's two of them. She said, what? I said, the gold got a drop shadow. She went, no, that can't happen with one eye. Have you got your other eye closed? I said, well, you've got a thing in front of it that's like, it doesn't matter whether it's closed. And she went, no, no, close your eye. I'm like, yeah, there's still a drop shadow. Anyway, she went, oh, you've got a cataract in your left eye. I'm like,
oh, great.
I'm not even 60, man. And then I bashed myself in the eye, on the right eye, in the summer. And I've got like a PVD thing, like a grey curtain that wafts in front of my eye period. So it's like great news for a photographer. Thanks.
Just what you needed.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Bring it on, God. There's only death left.
But at least you got whiskey. So
I was just thinking that very thing.
But we had a conversation last week on the Mac show about where's the benefit of the studio lens, the display. Studio display, when you've got so many great displays out there at really stupidly cheap prices that are absolutely excellent. And my question would be to you guys is, like, where's the 1.4 lens going to fit into the super cool when it's just going to cost you an extra grand to actually not get any real benefit from it, other than you're going, oh, I've got a lens that's a stop shorter, two stop shorter.
Yeah. I mean, and the big hype around like cameras, I think, is over a little bit. I mean, there was a time in the mid to early 2000s, to 2010s, I want to say, where like people were like really into photography and everybody was buying cameras and Canon was selling them like hotcakes and Sony and so on. I think it's that part is also over. So there's not a lot of people left that are like, I'm not a photographer, I'm not using it professionally, but I just have to have it. Right? There were always people like that.
I think there's also an awful lot of Johnny come lately photographers who are quite happy to have bought the stock lens with an 18-55 at f4 and they're out there and you're just kind of like, well, okay. I mean, I've helped a few people over the last couple of months and then listen to a freaking word I've said. I'm like, just carry on, just do what you're doing. I'm not going to even follow you on Instagram because you're just pissing me off now.
Yeah. Oh, good times. Hey, speaking of good times, Tom, tell us about your story.
Oh, okay. That's the end of that, then.
Well, you know, I figure we could talk about your camera lenses forever, but you know, Tom deserves a chance to talk too.
Oh, missed you, Jeff.
I've missed you too, Ewan.
Ewan, go in the back room and grab all your camera gear. We'll talk about your lenses one by one.
Yeah, show me your f-stop. I'll show you mine.
Another show title.
So this week, Accenture, which I always think of as a consulting company, but it's a bigger conglomerate than that, has bought Ziff Davis's connectivity division. It's like, okay, so who cares? Well, this connectivity division is the group that is responsible for tools like Ookla Speed Test and Down Detector. So this caught my eye because I use both of those a lot. Maybe I'm old school, but every time I get an app that's wonky on my phone or something weird's happening, the first thing I do is do a speed test. And there's, yep. there's yep. a million ways to do it, but I literally mm-hmm. use the Ookla speed test, and I probably use it twice a day. There's always some reason. I use it all the time. And then down detectors when, shit, a lot of things aren't working. What's going on? Is it me or is it, Amazon data center in Washington, D.C. is gone on the front? Mm-hmm.
You know what the benefit of speed test is?
Yeah.
What? It's the only name you can friggin' remember of the applications that will test your speed.
That's true. That is true.
I'm serious.
Yeah,
I think you're right. Why would you use anything else when you look at the App Store and find something called speed test, right?
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just worried about the typical takeover by conglomerate. Next thing for free, you can check it once a day. But if you sign up for a subscription, and then, the statements that they made about what the value of this stuff is, I don't understand Accenture clearly at all.
No,
what their strategy is. But it seems like a weird thing to buy. Ziff Davis isn't exactly known for leading edge.
What was Ziff Davis famous for? Because I'm going back like the 2010s. Yeah.
Their publisher.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. I know the name, but.
ZDNet, right? Ziff Davis.
ZDNet. Yeah. ZDNet. I remember now.
Incantations of that. They've been bought and sold and broken up six or seven different times in the last few years. And I'm not sure why they acquired Down Detector and Speed Test.
Advertising, it's a lot of money. Advertising money and eyeballs.
That's very true. Simple.
A lot of people use it.
It is a good ad platform for sure. And a lot of people, like you said, you get a lot of impressions.
Yeah. I mean, go to Speed Test and look at the website. I mean, the Speed Test is like this tiny, and the rest of the page is ads.
I haven't looked at their website in forever. Huh.
Let's hope you have an ad blocker.
this is another instance where I'm glad I have my pie hole.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, right. Well, part of the thing is I don't notice as many ads because I, of course, have an ad blocker.
With a pie hole, the speedtest.net website is really clean.
See. Like you.
Yeah, it's super clean for me too with my
It's like Netgear. No, not Netgear, Netscape.
Netscape. Yeah. It's running on Netscape.
It's running on Netscape.
Yeah. Hey, maybe that's how that pie hole works. It's really just a Netscape browser.
This explains so much.
No, it's actually just Mosaic, Patrice. It's older than that.
Okay, that makes sense.
I don't think this is the biggest story in the world, but I'm just a little bit concerned about, people always lament the internet's free anymore. And I don't get worried about that stuff too much. I just get worried about people buying stuff and messing it up.
Yeah, I mean,
that's fair.
Which to be fair, usually happens. I mean, if someone buys something, there's usually an expectation they might sell it at some point.
Well,
the type of companies who do that. Yeah.
But Tom? Sorry, answer this. Is that the model? Is it a buy and flip process? Is it an invent and flip process?
Well, I mean, you buy something for can be many reasons to buy it, but you don't usually buy something just to maintain it. Because otherwise, why do you buy it? So you either buy it because you think you can increase the revenue by combining it with something or having a better sales group or having a better strategy, or you can buy it and flip it. But to flip it, you want to make more money. So you have to improve it somehow.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm guessing.
Yeah. I mean, that's private equity. That's basically what happens there. It gets bought, it gets improved, and the improvement is usually we make it look better.
Cost cutting
and streamlining, called it streamlining usually. And then it's sell it again to someone else who will probably do the same thing.
Yeah, private equity does a thing. You know, I think the best case in the U.S., the best example is Toys R Us. Toys R Us was a thriving business, making tons of money. They got bought by private equity, who made a pulled a bunch of money out of them by selling the land that they were on that Toys R Us owned, and then to some other company, and having that company give Toys R Us some incredibly difficult to pay leases, and then Toys R Us went bankrupt.
Yeah, and then they sold the land.
But in all those transactions, a private equity firm made a ton of money. And Toys R Us, in terms of how much the revenue from the retail operations was doing great. It was growing.
Yeah.
We had a home store place in the UK that was British. I've got to be careful what I say. But they took huge amounts of loans against everything that they had in terms of property and land and that kind of stuff, paid themselves massive dividends, and then, of course, the company had nothing left and disappeared. Yeah. And that seems to be the way of capital companies going, is to loan against the assets and then collapse with debts after they've taken the dividend. And this, unfortunately, whether this seems like that or not, I don't know, but.
I mean, look at the Warner Brothers Paramount thing. David Zaslav is going to make hundreds of millions of dollars, and he did a crap job of running Warner Brothers Discovery.
Yep.
Mm.
And the employees are all going to get laid off, and you know they're going to do massive cuts, but he's going to walk away with $400 to $500 million.
And how is it going to get financed? With debt, right?
Yeah, $79 billion dollars worth of debt. Anyway, this is not the...
With the Ellisons having controlling interest. Bad mug. I love that mug, Ewan.
I've got a cup because Jeffrey's clearly drinking an old-fashioned out of a cup, so I thought I'd get a cup.
An old-fashioned.
Well, of course. I mean, it is technically... It is after midday. Noon where
exactly.
I am.
Exactly. No, sun's over the yard on, dude.
It's after 5 o'clock here.
I'm at your elbow, buddy.
You're in the British tech. You're on the British Tech Network, and it's after 5 o'clock, so it's totally fine.
The whole world, the sun never sets on the British Tech Network.
Exactly.
You know, I feel like I'm letting everyone down because I showed up to the show sober.
Amateur.
I know. I apologize.
Should I take offense at that because I'm the only person that's had a drink?
Well, you don't know what's in this mug.
Yeah, you don't know exactly.
Well, if you're actually genuinely sober, it's actually not an old fashioned. So,
well, maybe I was sober when I started the show.
Oh yeah, mate, you're not a lightweight like that. I don't believe that for a second.
Is there such a thing as a virgin old fashioned?
Probably. someone made it.
Yeah, that's called ginger ale.
It's okay. Not even
true.
It's called ice.
Yeah, right.
Because even the bitters are alcoholic. True. So,
But there is non-alcoholic bitters. So,
hang on, I'm going to text my son, and before the end of the show, I want an answer out of him.
Recipe for a virgin old fashioned.
I want a recipe. My lad is a mixologist. He's absolutely genius with it. So if I type this and he comes back before the end of the show, I will give you the recipe for a virgin. Now, the one thing I will say is gin and tonic, right? When I was not drinking before lockdown, I used to do a diet lemonade, and I used to put tonic water in it. So I do like a double measure of lemonade, and then I do tonic in it. And it clearly wasn't a gin and tonic, but it was passable. You could get away with it.
Yeah, sounds nice. I'll try that, actually.
I just want a picture of Ellis's face when he sees your text and go, why is Dad asking about virgin confessions? What is he doing right now?
Well, so far, the recipe I have for you off the top of my head is an orange wedge in simple syrup.
Yes, that's about it.
Okay.
And a guava. a slice of orange in a guava. Yeah.
All right. I suppose at this point we should talk about your news piece to Patrice.
Yeah, it fits quite well because we just talked about private equity and investments. I would call this one a sign of the AI bubble kind of at least slowing down. Like, I think it's still growing, but it's still slowing. It's slowing down. NVIDIA basically announced like today or yesterday or something that the massive investment, even though it was smaller than before, that they've done in OpenAI and in Anthropic might probably be the last they're doing this kind of thing. To be fair, the OpenAI, like, it's just, I mean, it's insane. 100 billion round. 100 billion. NVIDIA provided about a third of that, 30 billion with a B, dollars. So insane. To be, I mean, it's not really money. That's the crazy shit here. They usually just provide compute credits, or NVIDIA installs like their chips somewhere and they get to use it. And that's the investment, basically. This whole thing, I mean, OpenAI, NVIDIA, Microsoft, it's just, I don't know, it's a circular economy. It's like Microsoft invests in OpenAI, but in reality, they're just providing Azure credits that then OpenAI uses to sell stuff to us, right? So it's completely crazy. But yeah, I mean, it's about time. The numbers are just too crazy, to be honest. This doesn't make any sense anymore, and you're seeing it, like the.
Well, it's an AI bubble.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah,
and it's an investment bubble.
A while ago.
I
mean, I remember saying. Yet. I remember saying 6 months to 9 months ago, it's not AI, it's IA. It's intelligent automation, and a lot of it is. But having said that, I've got a relationship with ChatGPT that I really quite enjoy, in that I can go to ChatGPT and say, this is bothering me, what do you think? And it comes back with an answer, and the advice it gives ain't bad. It's not bad at all.
Yeah,
but I think it's like Clark Maxwell going, so I've worked out this thing, this magnetic field, or I've worked out this thing about what we can do with electricity, and it's there, so have at it. And then, well, tell you what, we could maybe power a light. And you go, oh, yeah, okay, that's cool. And they thought it would change the world, but it just powered lights. Well, actually, powering lights changed the world. And AI is the same kind of thing. It's like you thought it was going to do, you know, NVIDIA thought, well, it would tell us how to redesign chips entirely so they were more efficient. And maybe they've got a few clues that have disappeared. Ellis is typing, by the way, where they pushed them in the right direction.
Yeah,
and they've done a bit of Skynet in that direction. But but it's, you know, AI is
it's a tool.
It's a tool. Exactly that. It's a tool. 100% agree. So, we've never agreed before, Patrice.
That's really rare. Yeah, yeah. I think I said it like a week or two ago. There's two things happening here. The AI as a tool is growing and is here to stay and is changing the world, really. But AI as an investment bubble, that thing is going to burst. Like, I mean, right now, every company, like, and their grandmothers, they're all changing their names to something AI. Like, it's basically, if you don't have AI in your name, if you don't have AI in your pitch deck, you're not getting any money. But if you throw AI in there, I mean, clearly, they're just throwing money at you. And that has to end. Like, it's just not sustainable. So I hope this is the sign now.
And NVIDIA's already spent a ton of money with partners.
Even my
former company got an investment from NVIDIA, and it's the same kind of a circular deal. It's not an AI circular deal, but NVIDIA is also a customer of that company. So they invest, but their customer, do they get a deal on their next contract? I don't know, who knows. But none of these deals are I give you money for something of value in return. It's something weird.
Yeah.
But I mean, they've given so much money, and these companies like Anthropic and OpenAI are making noises about going public. You know, if I'm just from an investment point of view, why am I going to keep pouring money? And I've already poured money and I'm waiting for my payout.
Yeah, exactly.
Go public and give me my payout.
Yeah.
The payout wasn't money. There's the key, I think. Right, the payout wasn't money.
Yeah,
it's innovation. I think that the principle with AI, the bubble with AI, is the fact of that they thought they would get an advancement from AI financially through business changes, rather than a financial return from the investment itself, from the company that they invested in.
Right? I mean, but a little bit of both. I think ultimately the idea is also, if we invest $30 billion now, through all those business changes, we will make more money back in the mid to longer term, right? Or in the IPO, right? That we can sell some of the stock that we get through that, and then certainly, because everybody else now also wants in, and we're in early. So that was the idea, but I'm not sure it's working.
I think
the bigger payoff for NVIDIA is people buying NVIDIA chips.
That's true.
So they want to do everything they can. All the companies they invest in, like my former company, their software runs on NVIDIA GPUs. Mm-hmm. They want to keep it that way.
Yep.
They don't want companies looking at, you know, the Tensor processor, or, you know, chips from China. They want them to use, or AMD, they want them to use NVIDIA chips.
And that's because they want to overcome the physical dimension issues that we've talked about before, about physical square meterage plus layering, et cetera, of chips. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I think the greatest beneficiary of AI has been the ChatGPTs, the OpenAI, who are getting, and it's small beans, but they're getting 20 quid a month off me for me to go, so this person wrote to me and said this, and it's pissed me off. Can you give me a response that doesn't piss them off even more, please? Yeah. But also makes the point that I'm pissed off, and it gives me a response. I'm like, oh, okay, that's really good.
They are really good at that kind of. Think about the enterprise applications that are going to generate tons and tons of money. I mean, Patrice has talked about, you know, the coding for coders, and I just talked to a friend that works at a company that does very high-end scientific software, and they're using Claude Code, Codex, all over the place. And he says it's transforming the way they develop software. They're not 100% sure how to use it, but they know it's going to be a huge benefit.
Yeah, but here's a funny number. There was, like, recently a study, like, across, 60,000 developers, I think, where they measured really the improvement,
productivity.
Like the productivity improvement, it was an average of 5%. So it is better, but it's not the, oh, well, everything is getting replaced by AI at the end.
It's not 110 billion better.
No, exactly.
So, yeah.
And so the cost, they didn't even talk about.
Yeah, it's always stuff is always overhyped, but I wonder if there's some startup cost that has to get amortized over some time. Training and, you know, getting used to
exactly
a new way of developing code.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. But they didn't talk about this was about the they measured, like, all kinds of different things for developers, and, like, if you're, like, low user versus a high user, and like how long I've been using it, and, like, what is really the outcome, really the measured outcome. And I think it was, like, at the end they said, like, you can generate another, what was it, $1,500 more in a month on average. So, and I was like, okay, but what's the cost on credits that and whatever for to get that improvement?
And how much more is it going to cost in 3 months? You know?
Exactly.
So with AI, is there a Moore's law about this as well, to a certain degree? And the fact
to
that
some degree, yeah.
Yes.
The more people are using it, the more data they're feeding back, the more the algorithm grows, the more it becomes more useful, the more it becomes pertinent in the investor's minds or the user's mind.
For sure. I mean, we've seen it from the very, very first
ChatGPT
version.
ChatGPT 5 today, is it?
Yeah.
ChatGPT 5.1
today? 5.3 or 5.4.
Yeah. 5.3.
Yeah.
There's the other part about for the cost of AI is, one is, you know, you read articles about the software used for training or even inferencing has a lot of room for improvement. So there's potential to reduce the cost of training or inference just by optimizing software.
Yep.
And then on the hardware side, the reason that people are creating AI specific chips is because you can optimize it to do a single thing, and it'll do the same thing with less power, or do something faster with the same power. And so that's all over the place. That's why you see, you know, in the chip industry, there are a million startups doing AI processors. And I have seen in the chip world, in chip design world, AI assisting verification part of chip design, mm-hmm. and removing a lot of grunt work. And people are seeing, you know, it's not 10 or 100x, but they're seeing 30 or 40% improvement in some phases of chip design.
Yeah. But I mean, it's also not the... what was it, Claude, I think, that said, oh, yeah, like, our developers are not writing code anymore. And I'm like, yeah, that's BS. Like, forget it.
No, it's Jack Dorsey, right? Jack Dorsey
overhired
people, and now mm-hmm. he's saying, you need all these people because AI. No, Jack, you don't need all those people because you never needed all those
mm-hmm.
people.
Exactly. Overhiring.
Recording stopped.
Yeah, exactly. So
Patrice, can you just pick up the recording, please, mate?
I have a recording anyway. Doors.
Oh, okay, cool. I think Jack Dorsey only gets healthcare, doesn't he? So he doesn't care.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, to be fair to them, they gave those guys, they laid off pretty good severance packages.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, same thing happened at Twitter. Everybody thought Twitter was going to burst in fire when Elon fired half the people. And what he found out is, I mean, this is one case I'm actually agreeing with.
RHS is the same, mate.
Yeah.
Loaded, you know?
Mm. Yeah, it's the same. It's like there is a lot of middle management in the UK at the moment. In a lot of businesses, I've said NHS there glibly, but there's a lot of people who are not there making any difference whatsoever than having a meeting.
Yeah.
And a lot of companies are getting that way. There are jobs for people, and I'm not saying it's NHS. I'm saying it's a lot of companies
mm-hmm.
have people who are there to have meetings, and it's almost like if you haven't got a friend, have a meeting.
Yeah, I mean, I shouldn't say anything because I am part of middle management, and my job is in part at least to have meetings. But I'm also like constantly, I'm constantly questioning the meeting. I was like, do we really have to have this meeting? Do we really have to all be here? Because I'm like, I would rather have people work on shit than sit in a meeting. But I know so many people that do nothing, nothing else.
Paul Wheatley used to be around this, and he used to run stuff, and he always said if he had a meeting, it was always in a room, and he wouldn't mm-hmm. have it in a room with chairs.
Yep.
No one was allowed to sit
stand
because it shortened it. It shortened it. It made sure it was aerodized. It made it, you got to the point, you dealt with what was there. And I always, when I was doing project management stuff with people, I always said meetings are for decisions. Meetings are not for information. Emails are
correct.
For information.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, what should we do about this? No. If I hear what should we do about this, get out of the room. Right.
That's a good
point. Here's the two options, this or that.
This is what we should do about this.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, great. Hands up. Yes, no problem. Decision made. Yeah. Go right. Yeah. Next job.
Okay. And then also,
by the way, even though I scheduled an hour, if we're done in 5 minutes, everybody leave. We don't have to twiddle our thumbs.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Also, we don't need 15 people in the meeting. If there's two or three, the two or three people who can like do shit and make a decision, let's get those two people. We don't need anybody else.
Patrice, next meeting you have, stand up and say, meetings are not because you have no friends. We're going to make a decision, then you're all going to fuck off.
Yes, I'll say that because I say that all the time.
Good.
Like, I mean, as much as I organize meetings, I organize small meetings. It's like, okay, 5 minutes, let's talk about this, make a decision, what do you need? Okay, done, next.
I absolutely adore corridor whiteboards. I think they're frigging great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Three people together. What should we do with this? Okay, we can't resolve this. Off you go, subcommittee, sort your shit out, and then come back and replete. And that's what we'll do.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
so,
totally.
I mean, you can do that remotely. I do that remotely across multiple countries. You can do it. You just have to have the discipline to do it.
I love the fact that the retired bloke nodded. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he did any of it during his working career. He was the shill of the management, the man.
I don't miss. I had a Zoom
the bullshit.
With my former work colleagues, and two of them are still working out of the eight that were on the call.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I miss the people. The biggest thing I don't miss is stupid meetings.
Yes.
God,
I can so see that.
Drove me nuts.
You have a meeting because you don't have any friends.
Right.
Yeah. No,
if you're
need
a meeting yeah. then it's because you've got no friends. Anything yeah. else, you don't need a meeting.
You need a meeting to organize, to decide on how we're going to organize a meeting to talk about the meeting.
Yeah, 100%. Clarice is on a project at the moment, and she said to me, it was just like, oh, so she's like, she spends like 6 hours on Zoom meetings. And I'm like, you're a consultant. You're paid for advice.
Mm-hmm.
And they either take it or they don't take it. I mean, it's like...
Usually they don't.
Do this? Well, but you, and that's the beauty of consulting. I do consulting now. And mm-hmm. whether the meeting is totally productive and efficient or a
complete waste you're on, you're on an hour, right? You don't give a shit. Yeah, yeah,
and,
absolutely.
And now you know why now you know why BCG makes so much money.
This podcast and all the others on this network are brought to you by Or Technologies. They buy the server that keeps us afloat. They're awesome. They've got a camera system, which if you go to ortechnologies.co.uk, you can see a film about what it does. Measures temperature, pressure, humidity, noise levels, dust levels, vibration, carbon monoxide, carbon dioxide, light now, as well as on an external sensor. And it maps it all to the image. And you can then realize your construction site is over or under the environmental thresholds that you're supposed to be at. Or you can review the footage afterwards and see where to improve, where you've got opportunities for lean improvement and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Thanks to them for our support, because without them, we wouldn't be doing any podcasts at all. They're awesome. So please go and have a look at what they do. And if you've got a rail network that's being built in your locale around the world, get them to give us a call, and we can guarantee that they will be able to help you improve your efficiency and make sure you don't piss off your neighbours. Environmental managers is a perfect referral for us. Thank you very much. Right, time for the cool thing, and I've got to find mine, so it's not going to be me first.
Guess it's Tom
mine first. Mine was months ago. It's a YouTube video from Tom. Talk us through it, dude.
Okay, so this is the very, very, very nerdy part of the show. My cool thing. My cool thing is a video that
I've got an advert for a tandoori restaurant.
That might be a little bit more practical, though. My cool thing is a YouTube video that describes ASML's EUV lithography machine, which is probably the most important part of manufacturing advanced semiconductors. So all the Apple chips and NVIDIA chips are made at the level that they are primarily because of ASML's EUV machine. ASML is a Dutch company. It has its roots in Philips, you know, from many, many years ago. And they are the dominant, far and away the dominant supplier lithography equipment. There's still a little bit of Canon and Nikon out there, but very little. And the EUV machine was 30 years in the making, probably.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Very long time. I remember I was still young when I first heard about EUV. That's how long it's been going on. And this video does a pretty good job. This guy does a pretty good job of explaining many, many aspects of it. And the only downside to the video is it's pretty long. It's almost an hour long, but you can kind of fast forward through things. It's really interesting. If you have any interest in getting a little bit of an idea about how chips are manufactured and how lithography works in semiconductors, it's a cool video.
No, excellent. That's good. I mean, the thing is, it's like one of those things that touches every aspect of your life. There's virtually nothing you've got that hasn't got a semiconductor in it. And most people would, if you said the word semiconductor to them, you'd be better off trying to ask them where New Guinea is on a map. No, seriously. Like, you ask any British person or American person or Australian where New Guinea is, they wouldn't be able to tell you. What's a semiconductor? I don't know. Well, you've got one in your pocket.
Yeah.
Actually, you've got 30. You've got 30 in your pocket.
That's true.
Yeah. I stand corrected. good pick, mate. I'll have to watch that, because that I don't know what semiconductor does.
Well, actually, since you know photography, you know how light works. It's I think it's interesting for photographers. And the one thing that I learned about in the semiconductor industry is the people that focus on lithography, they were all camera guys. Their hobby, every one of them was a camera hobbyist, everyone.
So, I mean, I know lithography in terms of printing.
Same thing.
It's the same thing, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Same thing, except you're dealing with wavelengths and dimensions that are much smaller.
Yeah, on the nanometer level, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
Yeah, yeah, cool. Patrice, yours, Histogame.
Yeah, it's a game. It's a board. It's kind of a board game or tabletop game. It's music related, so it's really cool. There's an app basically, and it's connected to. It's a free Spotify account. You didn't even need the account. You can just like go on a website, and basically the idea is, you have those cards like these. And you have one in front of you, which is kind of your starting point. And then on the back of the card is a QR code. And you scan it in the app and it plays 30 seconds of the song. And you have to recognize it. And say, okay, like, I don't know, we have here, like, let's say my starting point is Bob Marley and the Wailers, No Woman, No Cry from 1974. And I'm listening to this song. And I say, okay, this is the Cordette's Lollipop, because I can read it. So is that before or after 1974? And you put it there.
I can do that.
Yeah.
I was sitting thinking, anything too, in the 90s I can cope with, but yeah. If I've got to do before and after, I can manage
before
and after.
But it gets harder and harder, because you're doing more and more songs, and you have them in front of you, and it's like, okay, there's like, I don't know, here's the third one, and like I play this one.
76 and 74, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, I mean, this is 61 and 58, and you're like, okay, is that like, was Elvis Presley Can't Help Falling in Love before the Cordettes in 1958 or after the Cordettes, right?
Yeah, that's hard.
So it gets harder and harder over time, but it's a lot of fun to play with people. Like, and it goes like from like 50s to... like I think 2019 or 2020 even, or something like that. So you've got a good mix. It's available in different languages. I got the German version. It was a gift from my mom. So it's the German version, but it is available internationally. So if you want the US version, go buy that. It's a lot of fun.
That sounds really good, as long as you're over 30.
Right. Yes, it gets... I don't know. I think even if you're under 30, it might be interesting, because I mean you will learn about songs you've never heard.
Well, there's a balance, because I'd get nothing in the 21st century.
Yeah, true.
I would fail all of it. I could do all mm-hmm. the 60s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s, but I couldn't do anything for the century.
Yeah.
Do you realize that between now and 1980 is the same as 1980 and 1936?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is.
It's like Tommy Dorsey versus The Who, you know?
Oh, not even, mate. I mean, 1936, you're back to the leftovers of the Charleston.
Oh, that's true. Right. That's true, yeah.
So, Patrice, you're showing your age, Mrs.
Oh, I'm totally showing my age. Like, I'm not even like hiding that. No, it's fine. I played it on the weekend with some friends, and it was a lot of fun. Like, it's really, like, we really enjoyed it.
It would get harder and harder.
Oh, yes. Yeah. And
you're
for some reason...
You're a 70s child, right?
No,
80s. 80s? 80s, Jesus.
80s child, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I'm 60.
Yeah, it was really fun. We played four rounds, and all four, I was in the winning team. I don't know. I seem to know a lot of songs.
From kind of like 1970, 1972 onwards, mm-hmm. the music has got a longevity. It's still current.
Oh, yes.
Whereas if that 20 years from where the first change was
mm-hmm.
from Chuck Berry, et cetera, up mm-hmm. to the Sweets maybe or something like that in 1970, that's really been a massive change.
And that's it gets really hard towards the, like, unless it's like there's some songs that are super 90s where you're like, okay, this is a 90s song. But it gets really harder the closer you get to today, because there's so many songs that are still current, or they have been current covers where you're like, was that the original whatever 70s version, or is that like a 2010 cover of it that was super popular? Gets really hard. So
excellent pick.
So you what you've got,
Michael, thing is a stool. Yes, what? You heard me right, a stool. Are you ready? So
Oh, look at that.
This is it, right? Ooh. It's brilliantly made. So basically, I've done a lot more sports photography of late. I've sat at the end of rugby fields and football fields for the last few weeks. And so basically, you effectively, it comes open like an accordion almost, but you twist it and then pull it out, and then you twist it back and it locks. And you can just see on that picture, you can just see my arse on that. So I'm 140 kilos, and it holds me no problem. It is easily the best money I've spent. It's like 10 pounds. You twist this thing open, then you open it out to its full length, you twist it closed, or you twist it locked, and then you sit on it, and even at 140 kilos, it's supposed to be good up to 180 kilos. Wow. It's unbelievable. Well, and like I said,
it collapses.
It's a tenner.
Such a small space.
That's a tenner?
I thought it was going to collapse a lot sooner than I wanted it to, but it didn't. It was absolutely superb. It's the greatest purchase I made this year. £10, you squeeze it open, you lock it, you sit on it, and then you undo the lock, and then you push it back together. And it's about the size of a dinner plate, a little bit less, and probably about the width of about four dinner plates all stacked. It's super. It's absolutely the best thing I bought this year.
Whoever invented this was... What a great idea. I mean, I always think about like you go to a golf event and those people are dragging around chairs with them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's so many reasons.
Well, I've got a bad back.
To have a chair, basically. Yeah.
Well, I've got a bad back. So when we go to the rugby club, I carry a shooting stick with me if I can't get a stool to sit on during the game. And sitting at the end of a football match, a rugby match, I was like, oh, I'm going to really struggle with this. As long as I lean against the hoarding, my back's fine. Absolutely good. So it is easily the best purchase this year. Well worth
Very
it.
Cool.
I like that.
Where can we get a hold of you, Patrice?
Well, on the Vic Show and the Mac Show here on this very network every week, Thursdays and Fridays. Everything I'm doing on my website, there's the social media links, the podcasts, the projects, the cool things. There's a whole page now with all the cool things since end of 2019.
Of course.
That you can just go and look up, and I'm going to publish today's cool thing also on that page shortly. And with Jeff Gammon together, I do Retro Rewatch. I think he showed the mug earlier, but I like to show it always.
It was contained. Oh, we need to do the old fashioned. Hang on.
Oh,
I've had a message from Ellis. Hang on. That's the wrong one. That's WhatsApp. It's not Messenger. Ellis said there's no Virgin old fashions, but you can get alcohol free whiskey.
Yeah.
Which is why on earth would you bother? normally, there's a Liars brand and an AF Bitters as well, which are alcohol free. So you can make it as normal with sugars.
There nice. Okay. So alcohol free bitters, alcohol free whiskey, and then just do it.
No.
The old fashioned way.
I saw what you did there, but we can just delete that bit, Tom. We don't need a recipe for an alcohol-free old-fashioned. Jesus. Yeah. This network has built its reputation on alcohol.
That is actually true. Yeah. Retro Rewatch. We rewatch retro TV shows, and Stargate SG-1 season 4 is on. And tomorrow we're going to get some upgrades because I'm going to publish the next episode, which is season 4, episode 3 of Stargate SG-1, which is upgrades.
Excellent. Tom, where can we get you, buddy?
You can find me on Mastodon. I am Tom F at sfba.social.
Okay, that's succinct. I'm still on Twitter. Remember Twitter?
You also still call it Twitter.
Yeah. Thanks.
No, yeah, it's no, still
you
Twitter.
Can get me at Ewan. The thing is, if you Google Ewan Rankin, I'm everywhere as Ewan Rankin. I don't try and hide myself. I don't post horrific shit like some people do. So you can get me on there. I'm probably on Mastodon as well, actually. Blue Sky definitely at Ewan Rankin. And I don't check Mastodon. I'm on Telegram as well. You can find all of my photography work at ministryofimage.co.uk. I've got a portfolio up there and I am pretty good at it. I've done it for 42 years this year. So, yeah, you can look amazing if you come and see me. And I want to get another podcast. I haven't been on another podcast for probably 10 years nearly now. So if you've got a podcast and you want a photographer on, or you just want an irreverent twat who just says nothing of any value, then give me a shout.
Oh, I've got your man.
I am your man.
Yeah. We should also mention where people can find Jeff, since he had to drop out.
Jeff's at Jay Gamet on all the socials, and on your podcast, as you said, Patrice. Mm-hmm. He does a shed load of other podcasts as well. Is he still hanging around in touch with iOS? And,
yes. The Context Machine.
Context Machine.
Mac with, Voices Live.
Mac, yeah, exactly. So,
yeah.
I'd like to be on those, but I'm not getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning.
No.
No.
Not
neither
a chance.
Is Patrice.
Not a chance.
But give us a call. I want to come on some more podcasts. Give me a shout. Right. Thank you. You can follow us at britishtechnetwork.com. We're on X, at British Tech as well, but we don't post anything there, so don't worry about it. And you can see us here every Thursday night for the big show at 7 p.m. UK time. And you can see us on the Mac show at 4 p.m. UK time tomorrow. I may be there. I may not. See you then. Thanks for listening.
And nobody noticed until now that I had the Big Show logo up. When I switched to the, when Jeff had to drop, I switched to the 3 view and like, it was the Mac Show.
No one cares. No one cares.
Exactly.
Chin-chin.
Chin-chin. That was funny.
Mac Show, Big Show, it's all the same.
Hmm.
Greeny didn't care what he said, let alone what show. So exactly. So I'm channeling me in a Greeny. Always channeling me in a Greeny.
Which is a good thing. He was like enjoying life, always fun.
Greeny will forever be the patron saint of British Tech Network.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
One of a kind, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I have some show titles.
I still have his watch.
Yeah.
Is it still broken?
Greeny's
watch. Same as it was when I got it. It's right twice a day. No, I didn't buy the shoes because the last time I was a size 9, I was about 13.
That's right. He only has one size. I forgot.
I'm stupid, but I'm not a fool.
That's funny. I got some show titles.
Oh, God, I miss this so much. I'm so happy I'm back.
Yeah, happy to have you back. And you seamlessly switched, like, jumped in. Like, nobody even noticed. So,
well, the irreverence has always been there. I've just had an outlet for it.
Who
have you taken the piss out of in the last 4 years? Not many people, actually, because they were going to punch me if I did. I really want to come on Mac tomorrow because I want to talk about the Neo, because where that differs from the Air, I think is really interesting as a conversation. And the Studio, what a fucking waste of time and money that is.
Well, especially the XDR version.
Yeah.
There's literally one use case that they also highlighted in their press release. It's for medical imaging, but I'm also like, why would you buy a Pro Display XDR for that? There's better and cheaper displays for that.
As the woman who works in medical imaging, are you not mostly on Windows?
No, they do have Macs as well. There's like, depending on which software they're using, they have Macs, so that's fine. But like, most, it depends on the device, but anything recent is probably Windows. So as I said, like, why would you buy that? Like, I don't get it.
Yeah, I think the people that are buying IT equipment for medical
for hospitals,
they're not buying a lot of Macs, right? They're not going to call Apple. They're going to go to Dell or whatever.
It depends a little bit. The bigger hospitals, for sure, not. Like, not a chance.
Right.
The small offices depends on the doctor. Like some really want their Macs, and there is software for Macs. Like there's medical software for Macs that you can use. But I mean, especially with imaging, it's usually hardware related, right? There's some like whatever, ultrasound or CT scan or whatever. Those are usually Windows devices. Sometimes like old, like they're still running whatever Windows 95 in a lot of cases, like literally. 3.11. Yeah, you're not that far off.
You know, honestly, we're due for kind of a tech refresh all over the house. You know, I need new computers, new internet, routers and things.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking, you know, should I go with Mac? You know, I always use Windows because that's what we used at work.
Mm-hmm.
But I've spent the last 20 years training my wife on Windows. And I hate
so it's time.
And she can figure it out. She can get stuff done. Mm-hmm. On Windows. And now I'm thinking, should I throw her a curve with a Mac? You know, it's not for a novice user. Is it really that different using a Mac than Windows? I don't think so.
It is. But
tell me we're still recording.
We are still recording.
This has got to stay in the show, mate.
But I mean, for a simple user, I mean, she opens up the web.
Ray, you are so in the spare room.
Yes.
She opens up, you know, a word processing document. That's all she does.
Mm-hmm. I think the thing is that so I don't think Apple's done anything to advance pages. In fact, it's even harder to use now to a certain degree.
Yes.
They've gone to the studio model. It was far more flexible, far more functional, far more usable for the occasional WordPress user.
Yeah,
WordPress, not WordPress, but you know, Word user.
Yeah.
And Numbers again, exceptionally easy in comparison. If you wanted simplistic stuff, if you want high end function, it's got to be Excel.
Yes.
Totally.
Yeah.
But well, and Keynote is behind.
Can you get Office stuff PowerPoint on Mac still?
Yeah, that's fine. Not a problem.
Yeah, it's all there.
But the problem Apple done is now they've switched all of my documents over, because when I double click the document, it goes, oh, no, you can't open it in the old one. You've got to open it in the new one. You go, okay, update to the new one. And then they go, do you want to buy the new one? I'm like, no, I don't want to buy the new one.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, because the new one is shittier than the old one. You haven't upgraded it. You haven't done anything beneficial to me. You may have done in Final Cut, but I really don't think you have, and you certainly haven't in Logic. It's no different than if you bought Logic to start with.
No,
you've just
it's
created
the same.
A package.
Yeah.
You've created a subscription model and done fuck all, effectively.
Yes,
that's the creative,
and that's
the creative
why.
Thing.
Yeah, this creative.
That's
suite
why
thing.
It is not worth going to Mac anymore.
I disagree, but not for that. For Word, not really. I think that overall it's more stable, and it's still, despite all the shit that Apple has pulled with latest versions, it's still more stable, and it's still, once you're over the hump of like, okay, some shortcuts are different if you're even a shortcut user, it is easier. For Word, it doesn't make any difference. No. Word is Word. Like, works the same.
So in a sense,
you lose the hassle of Windows, which is a good thing also for you. And the rest works the same.
Yeah, I mean, you know how it is. I've used a million different computers, and I did the Mac to PC transition 20 some years ago.
Yeah,
because we got rid of them at work. I'm sure it would take me, you know, 3 days to get comfortable on Mac OS again.
Yeah.
But I was always, before I you know, our company switched to PCs, I was a Mac guy from the 80s, you know. I was a Macintosh guy.
You look at this and be like, what has Apple done? Like, this is worse than it was back then.
It's like System 7.
Yeah, no, it's
there's simple stuff. Like, if you go to open a file, right, in Keynote, right, open.
Yeah.
And you go to open, it shows you the window of what you can open.
Yeah.
You can't scroll far enough down to get rid of the left and right button. So like the left and right slider bar, you click on that and you move it left and right, and you can't go to the last file, which is below. So you can't open that file. Unless you go to Finder and double click on it, and when you double click on it, it goes, oh no, you can't open it in the old version, you've got to open it in the new version.
Yeah,
really.
And then when you open it in the new version, you can no longer open it in the old version at all. and it's done that with all of my Final Cut stuff, mm-hmm. I am fucked.
Yeah.
Yes, the plugins work. They're all fine. However, I'm sorry, I'm not paying. I paid for Final Cut. I paid for Logic. Mm-hmm. I paid for what I didn't get paid for them, but you know, numbers, pages.
No, et you paid for them through you bought the machine.
Yeah, all exactly. Right, fair enough. Yeah,
they
exactly,
were part
yeah.
of the deal.
But now you're going, well, actually, you've got all the basic stuff there, but all of the templates have disappeared that I had free of charge before. Mm-hmm. They've all gone. I have to pay for those now.
Yeah, it's like, oh, by the way, like we now sell you the exact same. We sell you the exact same templates now.
I think the person, I'm sure it's from the service side of Apple, the guy said, you know, we've been giving away this iWork stuff for free for far too long.
Mm-hmm.
But it was one of the huge advantages of buying.
It's not just iWorks.
It's everywhere.
It's not just iWorks. It's the people that have paid, and I didn't pay very much. I mean, 200 quid, one-off purchase for Final Cut. Don't get me wrong. I'm very happy. That's kind. Yeah. So thank you very much. And the fact that I can still use all of the stuff, including the plugins in it, thank you very much. I do appreciate that. But trying to make me switch over to for the advanced features, and there's a bit of Adobe in this, in the fact that it's like when you did context-aware delete, it worked an absolute fucking treat. Since they brought out AI context-aware delete...
Yeah.
The original context-aware delete is shit. It does fuck all of any use. And it's just like, you know you dumbed that down so that you could charge me for this. And I'm paying 66 quid a month for Adobe for the full package. And I'm like, but what I do in it, 98% of what I do in it is levels.
Maybe a bit dark. I buy the fairly cheap version of the Adobe suite. You know, it's like $10 a month.
And
all I use is Lightroom. Mm-hmm. All I do in Lightroom is import photos, crop, straighten, a little bit of exposure, adjusting, 99%.
Yeah, a little bit of levels and then done.
That's it.
Yeah.
And I don't know enough to do anything more advanced in it anyway, and I don't really, I'm not professional, so I don't really care.
Yeah,
but it's hard to find decent software at a decent price that just does basic stuff.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, there's still some, but I mean, they're all step by step also just going away and like simply not getting updated. I think so. I'm in general not against a subscription model if the value is there, right?
Right.
If I get something for it. But
for what I'm doing with Lightroom, I mean, I'm okay with $10 a month. It's not very much money. But the fact that I get Photoshop and some other crap in there, I don't use Photoshop. I'm just a Lightroom guy.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, that's also the problem with the Apple package. Like, they packaged really weird stuff together. It's like, oh, you get Final Cut and Logic and all of that.
And Arcade.
No, Arcade is a different subscription. No, you get the Creative Suite to do with it, but then also you get numbers and pages and whatever, which has nothing to do with that. So it's kind
of weird.
If
you're doing just levels, GIMP is fine.
Yeah.
GIMP is excellent.
The UI is crap, but I mean, for that, you get used to it.
I tried GIMP. I guess I could put more effort into it. I tried using GIMP for a couple of weeks, and the UI just the GUI.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's shit! It's absolute shit. But it's just that's like me going to Germany and using a German keyboard and finding out the Z's where the R should be. That's all it is. You get used to it. Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
You just got to push through.
I'll give it a because I don't use Lightroom to manage my photos or do any of that crap. I use the operating system to
will rarely use anything other than Photoshop in the package that I buy. Illustrator I don't know how to use. Premiere I've never used. After Effects I don't use. I've used it twice and I've had to learn the thing that I did and that kind of stuff. So that's the thing that always frustrates me is like, I am a ninja in Photoshop. I can do anything in Photoshop. I am great at Photoshop.
Mm-hmm.
Stick me in Illustrator. I can't do a fucking thing. And how does that work? Mm-hmm. It's like all of a sudden, command A is not the fucking pointer. What am I doing?
Yes.
You know, fuck off. That's basics. So true.
Yeah.
Well, that's why I like when there's always you hear debates about Keynote versus PowerPoint, and the Keynote people say, "Oh, Keynote is so much better." Blah blah blah. It's like, well, when was the last time you used PowerPoint? So I never really used PowerPoint much. Well,
I use both. You know, and
it's like anything else. If you become a ninja in PowerPoint, you can probably get a lot more out of PowerPoint than
it's fine.
Does PowerPoint
the same as for Keynote?
Does PowerPoint export to a movie?
Yes. Yeah. You can do that.
Yeah. So that was always the thing that Keynote had.
Yeah.
Was the fact it was like a cheap After Effects.
Yeah. I mean,
because you can export it to a movie with transparent backgrounds and use it as your lower third generator and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. No, I mean, I would say Keynote is still better at a lot of things. It's like it's easier to use the effects and whatever the tools you get are better quality. It is still better, but you can do a pretty good job in PowerPoint and it's fine and nobody will even know.
Yeah, PowerPoint's a little bit hammer and chisel.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly. Yeah, but you can get there, right?
You know what I did the other day? I'm going on a trip related to my consulting and I have to give a presentation. And I just wanted to get sort of a draft and get slides with titles and organized outline and that kind of stuff. I said, shit, I'm going to try ChatGPT. You know, I don't.
Yeah, and it does it.
Yeah.
So, good enough. I said, write me a blah, blah, blah. And poof, I have a PowerPoint file with 10 slides with titles with the key points at each one.
And they look good.
Yes.
Well, I'm just doing the draft so far. And I asked them to do, I asked it to do a complete version of one of the slides. It's like, it's not horrible.
Yeah, you know, I used it for my talk at the Metrics conference, and the outline was really good. The content it generated in the PowerPoint later was also okay. A little bit too many words, like I wanted less, but it was a good starting point. And then I just took I just took my slide template and just copy and pasted the things I wanted and arranged them in the way I wanted. But like it got me halfway there basically, and so not bad.
Yeah, it was. It still saved time. Taking what's in your brain that goes to a prompt, which is pretty easy to type in.
Yeah.
Instead of sitting there with PowerPoint open and typing into each slide, it'd probably save you 30 minutes.
Yeah, it's iterative, right? Because you can start prompting and be like, okay, now that's and you look at you get something, you're like, that's not quite what I wanted.
Not quite, right?
And you're like, okay, can you change this, and it does it and whatever, and you iterate on it a couple of times, and then you're there, and you're like, okay, this is good enough, and then take it from there.
The biggest change I made in ChatGPT was I worked out dominance. Did the prompt start with the dominant phrase that you want?
Yes,
and dwindle it, and that makes a massive difference to the output. Huge difference.
Yeah, context. The context window is just the beginning and the end. Here's the secret: in the context window, the beginning and the end are dominant. The middle is kind of gets muddled.
Well, no, even the end. I mean, it's just like, this is what I want. And if it does this, it's great. And if it does this, it's great. This might be nice. This would be should be. This should be could be. This could be maybe.
Yeah.
And dwindle it down.
Yeah.
And you get far more result.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. Start with the important stuff.
That was a good conversation. I hope we put that in the show.
No, we won't, but the people.
No, that's a good conversation. No, seriously, link that in, because that's a good conversation.
Okay. Sure, I'll do it.
All right.
They get a post.
See you both, chaps. Take care. Au revoir.
Take care.
See you tomorrow, mate.